Welcome to episode 159 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for June the 12th, 2010. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, a Colorado town bans bicycles. More U.S. cities are looking at bike sharing. Pro cycling news. An Australian bike path made of used printer cartridges. And a rear-ended cyclist is charged with a crime against a motorist. Following the news, an interview with American cycling legend Davis Finney, plus pod-safe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to be back here with you, and great to have you here with me. Now, before we get started with today's show, I do have just a very fast personal request. I think, as you know, my wife, Donna, also known as Mrs. Fredcast on Twitter, she has multiple sclerosis, and she was diagnosed about 7 years ago. And after she was stabilized and the doctors were able to restore her ability to walk, and she's one of the lucky ones because she has relapsing remitting. I mean, if there's luck in MS, that's hers. After they restored her ability to walk, I vowed that I would do everything that I could to help fight this disease. And one of the ways that I do that is through Bike MS events. And I've got one coming up, and I need your help. We're going to be doing the Bike MS Utah Best Damn Bike Ride. It's sponsored by Harmon's Grocery Stores, and I need your support. It's a little bit late at this point to join the team, but every dollar counts, and I'm hoping that you will go to tinyurl.com/fredsagainstms and donate whatever you can to this very important cause. Every dollar counts. If that's all you can give, it's greatly appreciated. If you can give more, that is also appreciated. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but this is something that affects our family every single day and affects many people that I know and perhaps that you know. And I hope that you'll be able to help us. Go to tinyurl.com/fredsagainstms and please give whatever you can. Thank you so much. Well, let's get to the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast. And the news this week is brought to you by Keen. We've talked about Keen quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. We told you that Keen helps you live the hybrid life, allowing you to get outdoors and experience the outdoors, whether it's someplace totally secluded and in the middle of nowhere, or whether it's just walking around the urban environment. Experience the hybrid life through Keen's footwear and accessories, and you can learn more by going to www.thefredcast.com and clicking on the link for Keen. We thank Keen so much for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Keen. Now let's get to the news. Well, topping the news this week, I need to bring you a correction. One of our listeners sent in an email to correct me about something that I said on last week's show about the United States Postal Service. Specifically, we were talking about the Landis Gate situation and the fact that several of the key individuals that are implicated in that situation were members at one time of the U.S. Postal Service cycling team. And I said at the time that one of the reasons why the team would be investigated was because it was taxpayer supported, and the savvy listener, who I believe may be a member of the United States Postal Service himself, pointed out that the United States Postal Service no longer receives taxpayer money for what they do. They are a self-supported business. They get no tax dollars, and all of the money used to support the United States Postal Service comes from its sale of postage, products, and services. That's what they use to pay their operating expenses. Now, on the other hand, it is a special sort of a business in the fact that it does have some governmental powers, but it does not get taxpayer dollars. So I wanted to make sure that everybody was clear on that before we started the news this week. Perhaps the most significant story in this week's news is one that comes to us from a small Colorado town called Blackhawk. Blackhawk is known for its historic Main Street and for its local casinos, but now it seems that Blackhawk is known for banning bicycles. Yes, you did hear that correctly, banning bicycles. Back in January, the city council passed an ordinance banning bicycles from most of the town's streets, especially its main thoroughfares. According to Mike Kopp, the city manager for Blackhawk, quote, "The city council is looking out for the best interests of its citizens, its businesses, which are the casinos, and its visitors, the gamers. And if you, as a bicycling visitor, decide to ride on these streets where bicycles are banned, you will most likely meet a Black Hawk police person who will give you a citation that carries a $68 fine. According to Dan Grunig, executive director of Bicycle Colorado, the Colorado State Cycling Advocacy Group, quote, "It's a public road. It should be open to all the uses allowable for roads. No other city in Colorado has done such a blanket ban of bicycles like this. That's why Bicycle Colorado is very concerned about it, because we don't want it to set a precedent that other cities would follow." Grunig goes on to point out that if, as Mike Kopp says, the whole reason behind this is for safety, he wonders why that might be, considering the town of Blackhawk has not seen fatalities or an increase in bicycle-related accidents. Kopp counters by saying that the city is trying to be proactive and prevent those kinds of things, saying that the cities and towns' streets are very narrow, and with all those visitors coming in to spend their gambling dollars, it becomes dangerous for cyclists. Adventure Cycling has posted a route alert on their website, specifically because portions of their Great Parks South Section 1 ride, as you know, Adventure Cycling provides routes throughout the United States for those who want to go on long distance rides. There is a portion of that Great Park South ride that goes through Blackhawk, and this will affect those users. Adventure Cycling saying that they are, quote, "puzzled by the news that Blackhawk has banned bicycles from most roads in their city." Now, as a citizen of Colorado, or just as a concerned cyclist in general, there are things that you can do to help support Bicycle Colorado and those folks who want to ride through Blackhawk to try to overturn this ban. Of course, Bicycle Colorado would welcome your support and assistance. You can email the town, you can join Bicycle Colorado's campaign, or you can become a fan of their Facebook page trying to overturn this ban, and all of those links are in the show notes for this week's show, and this is show number 159. Now, for those of you who may be concerned that this means the death of cycling in Colorado as a whole, trust me, that is not the case. We'll be hearing from Davis Finney later in the show, who lives in Colorado and who will be telling us about Colorado's first century ride that starts and ends in downtown Denver. I think those are really positive signs for a state that is well regarded and well known as a haven and a mecca for cyclists. So don't let one tiny town affect your entire view of what is a beautiful and definitely cycling-centric state. In fact, one of the things that we talked about recently on the show is the fact that on Earth Day, Denver launched its bike sharing program, similar to Paris's Vélib program. And now Minneapolis is joining Denver in having its own bike sharing program, this program called Nice Ride Minnesota. And you can find specific information at niceridemn.org. And kudos to them, by the way, for their website. It is easy to navigate, simple to understand, and has some great information. I was very impressed with how simple yet powerful their website is. Here's the way it works for those of you who are in Minneapolis or who might be going there. You have the opportunity to buy subscriptions either for 24 hours, 30 days, or for 1 year, and there are discounted subscription rates for students for a year. And then once you've paid your subscription, if you're going to keep the bike for less than 30 minutes, there's no additional fee. 31 to 60 minutes will incur a $1.50 fee. 61 to 90 minutes will be an additional $3, and every additional half hour thereafter is $6. And yes, they are subject to local sales tax. A 24-hour subscription is $5. A 30-day subscription is $30. A 1-year subscription is $60, and that discounted student subscription is $50. Now, the group says that they have plenty of bikes all around town. In fact, 700 bicycles and 65 kiosks where you can swipe your credit card, or if you're a subscriber, swipe a key card, pick up a bike, and then go. So it's a great way to get around town in Minneapolis. And for those of you who are familiar with Minneapolis, you know that it does get just a little bit snowy there. So during the snowy months, all the bikes and stations will be removed from the streets and then brought back around April. It's wonderful to know that more and more cities in the United States are making this available. I travel to Minneapolis fairly frequently on business. I'm going to definitely check it out and see how well it works. But kudos to Minneapolis. And for those of you who are in that town, go ahead and give Nice Ride Minnesota a try. Now, for those of you in other towns in the United States and cities, Washington, D.C., of course, does have its bike sharing program. They're planning on expanding that to Arlington, Virginia later this fall. Also, U.S. cities like Boston, New York, and Chicago are also looking at adding their own bike sharing programs. It's great to see this going on, and we hope to see this all across the United States, indeed all across the world, as more and more people will have the opportunity to get on bikes for making those short trips instead of doing it by car. Moving to professional cycling, it's the time of year when the professional cyclists are doing all that they can to build up not only their conditioning, but also their confidence in the run-up to the Tour de France in July. Three races in particular that everyone is using this year to get ready for the Tour de France: the Tour of Luxembourg, the Dauphiné Libéré, and the Tour of Switzerland. Well, let's look first at the Tour of Luxembourg. Very high quality, high caliber field at this year's race, but the Tour of Luxembourg was won by Matteo Carrara from Italy in 14 hours, 41 minutes, and 58 seconds. And just 1 second behind him on the general classification was Frank Schleck from Team Saxo Bank and Luxembourg. Third place went to Lance Armstrong, 30 seconds back on the general classification as he prepares for his Tour de France. Fourth place to Juan Antonio Flecha from Spain, 34 seconds back. And in the same time, in fifth place was Sergei Ivanov from Russia. And all of those top five GC riders from the Tour of Luxembourg, with the exception of Sergei Ivanov, found their way to Switzerland yesterday for the start of the Tour de Suisse, where Fabian Cancellara from Team Saxo Bank won Stage 1, which was an individual time trial. So not surprising, considering Fabian is the world time trial champion. Fabian winning it in 10 minutes, 21.06 seconds. Second place going to Roman Kreuzinger from Team Liquigas. Third to Tony Martin from Team HTC Colombia. Fourth to Peter Sagan from Liquigas. And fifth to Dries Deyenis from Team Quickstep. For those of you in the United States who are wondering, Levi Leipheimer was in 17th place, 18 seconds behind Fabian Cancellara, and Lance Armstrong was in 44th, 29 seconds back. And for those of you who are watching those GC riders for the Tour de France, Michael Rogers was in 12th, 14 seconds back, and Andy Schleck from Team Saxo Bank was 24 seconds behind his teammate Fabian Cancellara in 31st place. The Tour of Switzerland continues through June 20th, and we'll have final results for you on the next episode of the Fredcast. Now, I delayed the release of this episode of the Fredcast specifically so that I could bring you the final result in this year's Dauphiné Libéré, yesterday's penultimate stage, finishing on the slopes of the Alpe d'Huez, the famed switchbacked climb all the way up to the ski station at the top of Alpe d'Huez, where we saw Alberto Contador continually trying to attack the yellow jersey Janis Brockovic from Slovenia and Team Radio Shack, Contador's former teammate on Team Astana last year. Every single time Contador attacked, Brockovic looked unfazed and easily made his way back to Contador's wheel. At the end of the day, it was Alberto Contador winning the stage in what was quite a valiant effort, with Brockovic coming across right on his wheel and maintaining his lead. In today's final stage of the Dauphiné Libéré, it was Edvald Boasson-Hagen from Team Sky soloing to victory on the final stage. But at the end of the day, it was still Janusz Brakovic winning the Dauphiné Libéré's final general classification. Second place on the final podium going to Alberto Contador, 1 minute 41 seconds behind Brakovic. And third place going to TJ Van Garderen from Team HTC Colombia, a full minute behind Alberto Contador. Contador is looking very strong, as is Lance Armstrong, heading into the Tour de France. Let's see how Lance does in this year's Tour of Switzerland. Perhaps after that, we might be able to start talking about some predictions for the upcoming three-week race in France. Well, unfortunately, it seems I'm unable to do a Fredcast without talking to you about doping and specifically what's now been termed the Landisgate affair. The federal government has now assigned a prosecutor to the case that Landis has brought through his allegations and admissions. That prosecutor is Doug Miller, an assistant U.S. attorney based in Los Angeles, and he is now the government's lead attorney following up the case that the Food and Drug Administration has brought through their criminal investigator, Jeff Novitzky. Novitzky is talking to Landis and others who are willing to cooperate in the case. Landis has hired his own legal team to represent him, the same legal team that Greg LeMond has used in the past. That law firm is Wilson, Sonsini, Goodrich & Rosati. It's the same firm that LeMond used most recently in his dispute with the Trek Bicycle Company. In addition, there are reports that the UCI has sent a letter to Floyd Landis asking him to, quote, cease and desist, especially in his allegations against Heine Verbruggen and the allegations that Verbruggen took money from Lance Armstrong in order to hide what is, according to Landis, a purported positive doping test against Armstrong in the Tour of Switzerland several years ago. For those of you who watch these sorts of things carefully, the name Doug Miller may be familiar to you. Doug Miller, again, being the prosecutor assigned to this case. Miller was involved in 2004 in the search for the person who leaked confidential grand jury testimony in the Balco doping case that included, among others, Barry Bonds. That investigation, which began in 2004, ended in 2007 with a conviction of Troy Ellerman, who was the attorney representing Balco founder Victor Conte and Vice President James Valente. Ellerman was given a 30-month prison sentence, and that was the longest term in that Balco case. He ended up serving 16 months in jail before his release in January 2009. There's a lot left to be said about this case and a lot left to be investigated. I'm very interested to see where this goes, whether it goes anywhere or even if it goes nowhere. Moving away from professional cycling now, I've got a great story for you from Australia. I'm willing to bet that most of you listening have at least one inkjet printer, maybe one at home, maybe one at the office, or you use one at school. And if there's one thing about those inkjet printers, they're usually very inexpensive, but where they get you, right, is on the replaceable inkjet refill cartridges. Now, for a lot of you, you may just throw those in the trash and they end up going to the landfill, taking up lots of space in landfill for items which probably are not very well biodegradable. For a lot of us, though, we take them to maybe our local office supply store where they give you a couple of bucks back on a rebate on your refills. And then you wonder, well, what happens to those cartridges? Where do they go? Well, I can tell you that down in Australia, at least in one case, they're beneath the wheels of cyclists. Specifically, recent upgrades and repairs were made to a 17-kilometer path between Alice Springs and Simpsons Gap. Included in that path is a bridge. That bridge made from a plastic decking material that is made from recycled inkjet cartridges. Parks and Wildlife Minister Carl Hampton commented, quote, "In keeping with our government's commitment to sustainable development, the bridge is made from recycled plastic decking or repless, saving landfill, trees, and ensuring a longer life with less maintenance." Kudos to the folks who made the decision to do this, and I hope that we see more and more of these kinds of sustainable projects being used not just for bike paths, but around all of our cities, towns, and even in the countryside to save the landfills and reuse things which cannot be reused otherwise. Now, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, I held over the release of this show until after the final results of the Dauphiné Libéré were known. And in this age of instant communication, and also in this age of constant entertainment, when a race is over, it's pretty clear who won, and they tend to get their accolades instantly, both on the podium as well as throughout the world's press, Twitter, and any other electronic media that are out there. But imagine competing in the 1948 Olympics in London and taking part in a cycling event that included two road and four track events. And imagine when the last competition is over, instead of getting all of that instant admiration, imagine if all you did was just get on your team bus and go back to your regular life and your regular job. And that's exactly what happened to Eugene van Rosbrück and his two teammates, Lode Wouters and Leon de Latuther. All three of these are Belgian cyclists, now in their 80s, actually, van Rosbrück and Wouters, both still alive, 82 and 81 years respectively, but Leon has since passed away. They were unaware that they won the team cycling event in the 1948 Olympics because after the 198-kilometer road ride, when the judges decided who had won the medals, they were already on their bus and headed back home. Well, last week, International Olympic Committee President Jacques Roget presented an Olympic gold medal to van Rosbrück 62 years after he won it. Van Rosbrück saying, quote, "It was complete chaos after the race. There was no ceremony or stage to collect the medals. Lode Wouters finished third. Leon de Latuther was fourth, and I was ninth. With these results, we were first in the team standings, but that was a result that they drew up only after many calculations. After the event, we just jumped on the double-decker bus back to the barracks that served as the Olympic Village. A day later, I was back in Belgium. It was only afterwards that we heard that we were the best team. None of us thought there was a medal awarded for the team event. The honor was enough for us." So how cool is it, even though 62 years later, for them to be presented now with a gold medal? As Eugene said, better late than never. Cyclists in Ontario in Canada are on the lookout for black bears after Kathy Black called 911 earlier this week when she was chased by what seems to be described as a 300-pound black bear. Kathy saying, quote, "I heard a branch snap, so I knew something was there. It was a bear. I panicked and started biking the other way and called 911 because it gave pursuit. I don't think it had any intention of eating me. It just jogged after me, but it was scary enough." This occurred in Orillia, Ontario, about 130 kilometers north of the city of Toronto. And this situation, along with others this year, when an ATV driver was charged by a black bear and when another individual was attacked by a black bear, ending up in hospital. Folks in that part of Ontario are now on the lookout for black bears. Reminds me of a situation we had a couple of years ago where a woman was chased in a national park in Alaska during a mountain bike race. So if those of you who are riding your bikes in Ontario, make sure that you do keep your eyes open. I do know that the Ministry of Natural Resources in Canada has set up baited bear traps, not to kill the bears, obviously, but just to trap them and remove them from the urban environment. And closing out today's news is a story to which I'm really looking forward to hear the conclusion. A 32-year-old cyclist near Lund in southern Sweden was rear-ended by a car last autumn and is now himself facing criminal charges. Andreas Gross is a competitive cyclist, and he has been charged with, quote, traveling on a prohibited carriageway because he refused to use the bike path nearby and instead chose to ride his bike on the actual road. Here's what happened. Grass is riding along the road when a motorist came up behind him and, quote, waved instructions, unquote, at him to move onto the bike path. However, Grass stayed on the road, and according to him, quote, that seemed to provoke the driver because he honked his horn again. In the end, he chose to drive into me from behind. Grass fell to the ground and had some road rash on his shoulder and his knee. He then reported the motorist to the police. The motorist also reported Grass to the police. In Sweden, there is a law that says that if there is a bike path available to you, you're supposed to stick to it. However, according to Grass, he says that there is an exception in the law that states that if you're careful and the road offers a shorter route, you're allowed to ride on the road. The trial is scheduled to take place in September of this year. According to Grass, quote, it's quite an unusual case, so it will be interesting. How many times has this happened to you when you've been riding on a road and a motorist thinks that you should be riding on the multi-use path or the bike path nearby, but you know that you are riding fast enough and safely enough to be on the road, whereas on the multi-use path, you may end up having to conflict with walkers and joggers and people pushing strollers and the like. And actually, for a bike, it's safer to be on the road in a situation like that. Really looking forward to hearing what happens with this case, and I hope to be able to bring you those results here on another episode of the Fredcast. But with that story, this ends the news for episode 159 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Well, it's time for the feature section on this week's episode of the Fredcast, and the features this week are brought to you by Jensen USA. We've been talking a lot about Jensen USA and the fact that they provide you with a great selection, great prices, and most importantly, amazing customer service. I received an email recently from one of your fellow Fredcast listeners who ordered through Jensen USA. This listener, located in Quebec, Canada, saying that he had ordered tools through the Jensen USA website after hearing me talk about Jensen on the podcast. He said it took 2.5 days to have them delivered to Quebec, all the way from Ontario, California. He said, thanks to FedEx, maybe, but still, great performance from Jensen USA and much better than many of the other websites that he'd used. Well, if you're looking for, again, great customer service, fast delivery, great prices, and a phenomenal selection, don't forget to check out Jensen USA. You can find them at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. We thank Jensen USA for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. A few weeks ago here on the Fredcast, I told you about the upcoming Denver Century Ride that takes place on Father's Day, June 20th, in Denver, Colorado. It is Denver's first Century Ride, starting and ending in downtown Denver. In addition to the Century, there's a variety of other distances available and plenty of events surrounding this ride, specifically, I think, because it is taking place on Father's Day. Well, having mentioned that on the show, I was contacted by one of the organizers of the Denver Century Ride, letting me know that one of the charities to whom they are giving some of the proceeds from this event will be the Davis Finney Foundation, and asking me whether I might possibly be interested in speaking with Davis, famed American former pro cyclist. It took me about a nanosecond to scream yes, and I had the great pleasure and opportunity to speak earlier this week with Davis Finney by telephone. Here is my interview with Davis Finney, where we talk not only about the Denver Century Ride, but also about his career, about his wife, Connie Carpenter Finney, American gold medalist in the Olympics, and of course, about his son, up-and-coming professional cyclist, Taylor Finney. I am really pleased to welcome to the Fredcast a name that many of you should know, and if you don't, you will shortly. Davis Finney, welcome to the Fredcast.
Thanks so much. I mean, this is my first Fredcast, so I'm definitely excited. Let's do it.
Well, let me ask you this before we get started. Are you a Fred?
Well, I haven't been called a Fred lately. I've been called a dork, however. So, you know, it could be that if this parallels to Dorkcast.
You know, I think my listeners might take umbrage with that, but, you know, a lot of people certainly have called Freds, you know, equivalent to dork. So I suppose that's possible. Davis, I certainly wouldn't call you a dork, and I probably wouldn't call you a Fred either. And I wouldn't, because I know your history. But if you would, in your own words, kind of share your cycling history with the audience.
Well, briefly, I started racing at the age of 15, born in Boulder, Colorado. My first exposure to bike racing was through the Red Zinger Classic, which then subsequently became the Coors Classic, which was America's biggest bike race and multi-day race in the 80s. And that really turned me on to wanting to be a bike racer. And, you know, 18 years later, I'd had a full career, which included a Coors Classic overall title and some 22 stage wins and a couple of Tour de France stage wins, some U.S. national championships, and the list goes on and on. But what a great vehicle cycling was for me to express my athletic talents. And, you know, and it led me to meeting my wife, Connie Carpenter, who is an Olympic gold medalist. And, mm-hmm. and that led to us having two wonderful children, one of whom who is a fairly well-known cyclist himself, Taylor.
Taylor Finney, never heard that name.
Well, just look on Twitter, you know, he's a social media hound. So.
He is indeed. And I want to come back to Taylor, but I want to focus on you for one second because, you know, you sort of understated the way that you talked about your history. The first American to win a stage at the Tour de France while riding
correct.
On an American team. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, and that was what was part of the, you know, I don't know, I guess I'd say part of being a cyclist in the 80s was, or being a good cyclist and being on a team 7-Eleven that was able to go to Europe and just sort of open the doors for the programs that would follow, like the Motorola team or U.S. Postal Discovery, Garmin, all these programs that subsequently followed, which are American-sponsored and populated with American riders, to varying degrees. You know, we got to start that, and we got to be the first American team in the Tour. And we, you know, I won a stage on the second day. My teammate Alex Dita won the yellow jersey on the very first day, on the very first stage of the Tour. Mm. And so, you know, talk about exciting times, boy. It was a great era, I guess I would say, to be part of cycling. And something that couldn't really happen today, because you don't just walk into the Tour de France anymore. You have to build yourself up to a certain level of international stature, and it's a lot more complicated and a lot more expensive.
But in those days, you know, in 1986, to have an American team and an American come in and win a stage, wear the yellow jersey, what was it like in those days? How did the Europeans treat an American team coming in there and an American wearing the yellow jersey and then you winning a stage? What was that like?
Well, I should first and foremost correct you, just North American, because Alex Steed is Canadian, so we can't quite adopt him as our own, but close. But it was, you know, that's a really good question, because we felt like we were just interlopers trying to crash into a private men's club. Mm. And we definitely had chips on our shoulders in a sense, because, you know, every single time that anything happened, there was an accident or something that happens in the peloton just on a regular basis. Everybody's like, oh, Americano, Americano. They blame us. And sometimes it was our fault. And now that I look back, I can say that, yeah, we did some rash things and we were inexperienced, you know. But but we didn't necessarily deserve sort of the ill-favored treatment that we got. But at the same time, you know, success brings acceptance. And as much as the Europeans were surprised and resentful of the fact that this brand new team that many of them had never heard of or raced against shows up and the first day wins the yellow jersey, second day wins the stage, and they're just, you know, they're just going, I don't know if we invite these Americans back again.
Well, it was certainly a wake-up call, right?
Well, yeah, wake up for everybody. I mean, it really, even for us, because I don't know that we expected to have such immediate success. Mm. And then the tour being the tour, you know, you definitely pay a toll, and it extracts a price, and it did with our team. You know, I ended up getting sick that year in 86 and not being able to finish. And, you know, various calamities befell some of the other guys. And so I think we finished out 9 stars. I think we finished with 4 in Paris. But, you know, that was still something then to be gone back and see the race through, you know, for me and for some of the other guys. I mean, well, it was certainly great to win a stage, and I won a stage in 87 as well. It was as important from the standing of how you're looked at by your brethren in the field to finish it off. And so it certainly felt good to ride through Paris a couple times and see the Arc de Triomphe and the finish line.
I'm just smiling from ear to ear because I can't even imagine what that's like. But let's talk about Connie real quick. So Connie is your wife, an Olympic gold medalist in 1984. And I'm just wondering, because both Olympians, I spent some time at the Tour of California with Steve Haig. You keep in touch with people from those days, whether it's from the Olympics or from the 7-Eleven team. Does Connie keep in touch with her colleagues? Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, cycling is a big family, and in my case, with many of my old teammates and friends, they're still involved with the sport. And so I was also at Tour of California for a couple of days and able to reconnect with a few of the old guard. Connie, probably less so, just because women don't tend to stay involved with men's bike racing, and that's primarily where cycling has evolved, unfortunately. I think, because one thing that was so great in Connie's day was that races like the Coors Classic had both a men's and women's field, and the women were you know, while they had some different races and maybe a different style of racing to some degree, maybe not as aggressive or whatever, it was held in as high a regard as the men's race and got equal press. And that was so helpful to the development of women's cycling in the 80s. You know, and now while there are women's races, the biggest men's races, like Tour of California here in this country, don't have a women's field. And, you know, one of the things that we've been strong advocates in this discourse between Governor Ritter and Lance Armstrong and others who've talked about bringing back a stage race in Colorado, is to add a women's event to that, you know, just along the lines of what used to happen in the Coors race.
And, you know, those rumors are getting stronger and stronger, and that would be so great if there was a women's field as well. That would be amazing. The two of you, there's no doubt, have, you know, just amazing athletic genes. And now there's this young man out there on the international stage who's proving it with what he has been doing on the bike as a dad, not as a cyclist, but as a dad. Tell me a little bit about your feelings about the success that Taylor has seen.
Well, Taylor is so quickly, outstripping anything that his mother or I accomplished. It's, you know, I couldn't be anything but thrilled. You know, he's he just keeps doing one amazing thing after another, and some seemingly without that much difficulty. And I know it is tough for him because he has a lot of pressure on himself, or he puts a lot of pressure on himself, and he has a lot of expectation from people who've grown used to him doing amazing things. But you know, his list of accomplishments in just a few years. I mean, the kid started racing in 2006 and won his first world championship as a junior in 2007. Won his second world championship still as a junior in 2008. Went to the Olympics in 2008. You know, and then last year he won the very prestigious race in France called Paris-Roubaix. For the under 23 category or espoir category, and this year he repeated, and he was the first repeat winner of that event ever in the 44 year history. And so he just keeps climbing the ladder, and I think you'll see him very quickly make the leap. Right now he's in the Trek Livestrong team, which is sort of umbrellaed with Radio Shack and was created by Lance Armstrong in order to have a place for people like Taylor to grow and develop, and as well as be involved with companies that Lance has a long-term association like Trek with. And so I think it won't be too long, maybe even this summer, that you'll see Taylor make the last jump in his career in terms of becoming a full-fledged top line pro, and then we'll see how he develops from there. But boy, you know, I mean, I tend to understate people's abilities and accomplishments, especially those related to me, to not set up expectations. But this kid is really special, and he's really something. I won't be surprised basically by anything that he does in this sport.
Now, how much of what he does came from, you know, things that you did with him when he was a kid? I mean, you know, most dads are out playing catch with their kids, you know, try to get them into baseball or you know, throwing a football around. How much is cycling, I can imagine it's a lot, but how much has cycling been a part of your family's life from the time that they were young?
Well, that is an excellent question. I think it's some of what we did and some of what we didn't do. And what we did do was expose both our kids. His sister Kelsey is 3.5 years younger than he is, and she's actually also quite accomplished as a Nordic skier. But she veered away from the family business per se of cycling, whereas Taylor, most especially, was exposed to our bike camp business, and Connie and I taught cycling camps as a side business and taught adults, you know, techniques and training and whatnot. And so Taylor would go out, not so much to go out on these long grinding road rides when he was a little kid, but he became our expert in cornering. And we would do these parking lot cornering seminars, and he would come out and just grease around these cones. And so we always tried to, while exposing him to the technique end of the sport, keep it really fun. And, you know, for me, I learned a very good lesson with him when he was 6 years old. We went on Ride the Rockies, not to do the whole 100 miles or so every day, but just to do a part of the ride on a tandem where he was in the back, I was in the front. And he could put his feet on the handlebars, he could do whatever he wanted. But I wanted to have him have the experience of riding with both me, myself, and my father. So the three Finney boys, three generations of Finneys, because my father was not that long left on the planet with his own battle with cancer. So I wanted to have us have an occasion to ride together. Well, and, you know, and I thought we had a pretty good time. I mean, I would do a lot of the work. I'd only have him ride 20 or 30 miles, and then he would get in the car with his grandmother, and my dad and I would both be on, I'd trade to a single bike and we'd finish the rest of the ride. Well, still, for a six-year-old, that proved maybe a little bit too much, because a couple months later, the subject came up about Ride the Rockies for the following year, and I said, geez, T, I don't think I can do it. I have some conflicts. And he looks at me and goes, well, Dad, I think that's good, because I think I'm going to take next year off. And he took the whole year off of riding his bike, period. And I go, well, that was a good lesson. So
an early lesson in recovery for an aspiring professional cyclist, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, but, you know, I mean, again, we allowed, cycling is too difficult to be done under someone else's direction as a young person. I think it's something that you want to do because you want to do it and you like to do it. And if the motivation does not come intrinsically, then you can be the greatest ever 13-year-old on the planet that your parents, you know, create this wonder child. But almost in every case, by the time you're 18, you're done with it, because it's not your choice and it's not your decision to do it.
Yeah.
And so I think that we really felt that you know, both our kids had to choose their paths, and we would just expose them to sports we love to do, but never force them. So
nice. Well, you know, you mentioned the Ride the Rockies, and you mentioned doing, you know, Century every day, and really the way that I was connected to you was through a Century ride that's coming up, and I thought we might talk about that a little bit, because it's there in Colorado. It's the Denver Century. Tell me a little bit about it, and tell me a little bit about your connection to it.
Well, the Denver Century is a new ride. Great concept to have an actual century or 100-mile ride as part of a day of cycling celebration that starts down in Invesco Field. And, you know, you don't have to ride 100 miles. You can ride 100 kilometers. You can ride 22 miles along the Platte River, you know, but it's a great concept to have a ride from Metro Denver that starts and finishes in one location and whatnot. And my tie to it specifically is that it benefits a number of local foundations, including the David Finney Foundation. And so I'm pleased to promote cycling always, first and foremost, because I think getting people out on their bikes is obviously a good way to spend your weekend or your holiday. But most especially when you can do good for others by having part of your entry fee go towards these local charities, that's a great thing. And with the David Finney Foundation, what you're helping support is our mission, and what we do is we work with people who have Parkinson's disease. I have Parkinson's myself, and we're just advocates for living well and providing information and, you know, new information on how to live well today with Parkinson's. We're not so focused on curing Parkinson's, but we are focused on how you can live well and enjoy your life today.
You know, I've mentioned on the show before that my grandmother had Parkinson's, and I saw the way it took a vibrant woman and made her life difficult. And so having an organization like yours that's focused on living well, I think is really important. Because I think you're right. There's a lot of organizations out there that are looking for the cure. Tell me a little bit about how it's affected you. Are you still able to get on your bike?
Yes, I can get on my bike. And, you know, it is a difficult disease, and it can make your life incredibly challenging. You know, I myself have had a terrific response to having a procedure called deep brain stimulation. And what that is like a pacemaker for my brain, which helps me function much, much better on a daily basis. While I can't ride to the level that I once did, you know, nor could I anyway, because I'm 50 years old, but but the challenge is still there, and it's still somewhat considerable. But I find that by staying with it and staying active, I've really helped to stem my decline in this disease, which you know it doesn't have a cure. And so, well, people, you know, one big reason we focus on not looking for a cure per se is because other people are doing that, but also because, you know, I run into so many people living with Parkinson's who say, well, I'm just waiting for a cure. Mm. I say, well, okay, while you wait, you're declining, and to wait for something, it's just too passive. And so I'm trying to sort of get people to get up and get out of their houses and be engaged in their own well-being. And in the process of that, look around and notice, geez, you know, yeah, I may have a tremor, or I may have this physical disability, but it doesn't mean I can't engage in life. It doesn't mean I can't find ways to enjoy my day. And that's just so important. And so I've really come to embrace my Parkinson's tribe, and am a leader, I guess you would say, and an advocate by my own example. And so part of that example is that, yeah, you bet, I still try to get out and ride when I can.
You know, it's funny because I Parkinson's is one of those diseases that I think everybody knows someone or multiple people who have been either have it or have been affected by it, somebody in their family. And I think that unfortunately, too many people do exactly what you said. You know, they sit at home and they don't get out. And I think getting out is so important for everybody's mental well-being. Get out and do what you can, and get up. What kinds of programs does the Davis Finney Foundation have for people? Is it just in Denver? Is it across the country?
No, it's we have two great programs. In my view, they're great programs. One is an actual symposium series, which we had our first one in Denver last fall, and then we've subsequently branched out. Going, I was just in Charlotte this last weekend. We've had them in Tucson and Birmingham, Alabama, and you know it's really just an open invitation for people living with Parkinson's and their caregivers to come in and hear various experts on movement disorder, on physical therapy, on voice and speech, on dance, on nutrition. You know, and so it's sort of an open invite, as I said, for people to come in and hear our brand of Parkinson's wisdom, as well as just becoming inspired to do as you say, to get out and do and be and walk away with something tangible that they can say, oh, geez, I can do this and this and this. And so in general, we get 500 to 700 people who come to those. But in lieu of having one of those in your immediate area right now, what we have online available is a program called Every Victory Counts. And what that program is, when you sign up for that program, basically you're just paying for the cost of the manual that we then send you, which is meant to be an interactive manual and updated with regularity by once you're in the program, then you can get to the website, which has that information, and that's a distillation and an amplification in both cases of what we teach in our symposiums, as well as the work that's being done by neurologists and people involved with Parkinson's on a day-to-day basis. And what I love about the manual and the program is that it also showcases a lot of voices of people like mine, but relatable in every sense of the word to someone who has Parkinson's, and it's telling their story as well, And so, you know, both all of that and information about all of that can be found at www.davisfinneyfoundation.org, or just go straight to the program on everyvictorycounts.org. And, you know, I mean, as you can tell, I'm definitely passionate about it.
Absolutely.
But you know, and so writing, doing, getting out for those of you who don't have, your listeners who don't have PD or even have a tie to PD but want to be helping themselves and others, you know, I think it is really valuable to get out and be a part of a ride like the Denver Century. And that is on Father's Day. So
it is. Yeah, I was just going to mention that. You mentioned the holiday. I wanted everybody to know it's June 20th, 2010. It is Father's Day. What a great way to spend Father's Day with your dad. Get out and ride with him. And the route is just fantastic. You said it starts in downtown, and then it branches out from there depending on the route you're taking, right?
Right. And there is, I think there is a website.
There is. Yeah, it's DenverCenturyRide.com.
DenverCenturyRide.com, yeah. And you can find info on there about the various routes. But, you know, it's a challenging ride without just being something that you feel like you've been bludgeoned, you know, from. But what I like is that they have the various distances so if you want to do an easy ride along the bike paths downtown with your kids, you can do that, you know, or they'll have games and whatnot down by Invesco where there's lots of parking. You can leave your kids there and go off on the more arduous rides up Lookout and down through Red Rocks and sort of circle Denver that way, circle South Denver, Southwest Denver.
Well, you know, Colorado is such a cycling community, so it's great to see Metro Denver have a century and a ride like this of their own, and to know that it's going to a good cause like the Davis Finney Foundation. So you're celebrating Father's Day with, you know, your dad or with your kids. You're having a great ride, and you're benefiting some great charities like the Davis Finney Foundation. Davis, I want to thank you so much for coming on the Fredcast. I know I took a little bit more of your time than I thought, but your story is so interesting. Okay. And compelling.
No, I appreciate the time, and like I said, you know, it's thrilling for me because I've never been on Fredcast. So,
well, you're welcome anytime.
All right.
Davis,
well,
appreciate
thanks so much for having me.
Oh, we appreciate it so much. Good luck with the foundation, and of course, good luck to the Denver Century Ride.
Okay, absolutely.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed doing it. I just was charmed by Davis and by just the amazing accomplishments of everyone in his family. And I know that if anyone can bring about change in the Parkinson's community, it's going to be Davis Finney. So kudos to him. There are links in the show notes to everything that we discussed, from the Davis Finney Foundation to Taylor Finney to the Denver Century Ride. So go ahead and check it out. This is show number 159. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. Once again, I want to thank our sponsors, starting with our news sponsor this week, Keen Footwear, helping us to live the hybrid life. Go to thefredcast.com and click the Keen banners for more information. Our features this week were sponsored by Jensen USA with their great products, great prices, and great customer service. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. The show is always sponsored by your donations. Just click the donate link on thefredcast.com. And speaking of donations, please don't forget to help us fight multiple sclerosis by going to tinyurl.com/fredsagainstms. If you'd like to keep in contact with the show, there's a couple of great ways to do it. Of course, our Twitter feed, my Twitter handle is simply Fredcast. You can send an email anytime you like to thefredcast@gmail.com. You can follow along on Facebook at facebook.com/Fredcast, or go to our website at www.thefredcast.com. If you'd like to send an audio comment to be played on the show, just dial 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-FRED. 513-3733. And now it's time once again for a little PodSafe cycling music. This week's PodSafe cycling music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by the Cadence Revolution, your weekly podcast of PodSafe music that's perfect for your indoor cycling, available at www.cadencerevolution.com. This week's music is by the Quick and Easy Boys. It's called Take Your Medicine, and there are links in the show notes to where you can get more information or buy these songs on iTunes. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Fredcast. Thank you so much for listening, staying subscribed, and telling your friends about the Fredcast. Between this show and the next, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.